For Gallup, I'm Muhammad Yunus, and this is the Gallup Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the costs of healthcare and why Americans are still paying more than most and getting less for it. Shelley Leifert is President and CEO of West Health. Tim Lash is Chief Strategy Officer and Vice President of West Health. Folks, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here.
Terrific to see you. Terrific to be with you, Muhammad.
I'm truly blessed to have learned from several discussions we've had about the cost of healthcare, and I'm grateful for you both coming on and sharing some of those insights with our listeners, particularly now as healthcare takes such a central role in all of our lives. Tim, let me start with you. Most people in America agree that America has a healthcare cost crisis. But how much does the U.S. spend on healthcare, and what do we have to show for the investment we're making?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we spend too much and we don't have a tremendous amount to show for it. But when we think about the overall cost of healthcare, aggregate numbers north of $4 trillion in national healthcare expenditure per year. A lot of discussion this past election around prescription drugs. We spend over $400 billion a year on prescription drugs annually. There's actually a great site, healthcarecostcrisis.org, that dimensionalizes a lot of these parameters and these spending figures. But I think to really understand what we're spending, you have to look at sort of numbers that are easier for us to sort of get our head around, right? So let's just look per hour. When you take $4 trillion and you put that down to every hour, how much are we spending? It's $420 million, right? And it's just not sustainable.
And I think, you know, COVID has really shined a light on the fragility of our healthcare system. And when you think about that number that Tim just said, $420 million per hour, you know, clearly we need to make some serious changes.
And speaking of changes, Shelley, one thing that I really love about what you all do at West Health is you use a combination of philanthropy, policy analysis, data science to really try to address the cost of healthcare and improve particularly the lives of seniors and access that seniors get to quality healthcare. Talk to us about how you all do that. Take us through some of the things you've all been involved in.
Yeah, thank you. So every 8 seconds, someone in this country turns 65, and seniors primarily consume more healthcare than any other demographic in our country. And we're going through this profound demographic shift. I'm so really excited to have the wisdom of so many seniors in our country. And now we just need to do a much better job of reconfiguring our healthcare system to assure that our seniors are well cared for moving forward into the future. So at West Health, we take a three-prong approach to something that we call successful aging. So Muhammad, think of it as three legs of a stool. We have applied medical research. We have policy opportunities and policy studies and research. And then we have a private foundation, and we're able to kickstart innovative new models of care that provide the right sort of care to the senior in their communities at home. Our goal is to keep folks out of the high rent district, which is what we call a hospital or a nursing home. And we take this three-pronged approach where we're able to develop a model, we're able to kickstart it with our philanthropic dollars, we're then able to study it through applied medical research with some of the best academic medical centers in the United States, and then we package up all those findings and we send them over to Tim as the president of our policy center in Washington, D.C., and he's able to help inform more enlightened policy that would provide greater sustainability around payment models for these new mechanisms of care. We're really innovative, and we're kind of an interesting model. There's not anybody like us in the United States, and we're able to play in three different sandboxes: the foundation sandbox, an applied medical research sandbox, and the policy sandbox. And then we pull everything together under this one mission, really focused on seniors.
And it's so necessary because healthcare is such an ethereal kind of part of our life, economically, in terms of our physical well-being, in terms of obviously now social, public health with the pandemic. Tim, we often hear the phrase that sort of companies are putting profits before people or people's health. Tell us about how high healthcare and drug costs have impacted our economy and are impacting consumers right now.
Sure. Well, you know, unfortunately, people are forced to make decisions because of the high cost of care that they shouldn't have to make. So we've seen through the partnership with Gallup that one in four Americans are foregoing care because they simply can't afford it. When you ask individuals, do you know someone that has passed away because they weren't able to afford the health care that they needed? Over 34 million Americans indicate that over the past 5 years, they've lost a family member or close friend, again, because of the inability to afford care. And when we think about the high cost of healthcare, there's really two things that we have to look at. One is utilization, right? How much healthcare do we consume? And then the other is how expensive is the care that we're receiving? And, you know, unfortunately, in the United States, we have high utilization. It's, you know, moderately higher when you compare it to other developed countries, not across the board, but in important areas. But our costs are just out of control. And it's often justified by industry, particularly the pharmaceutical sector, that we need to have this high cost to support the innovation, you know, the innovation that we just saw, you know, around a vaccine. And fortunately, and I emphasize the word fortunately, that is just not a valid argument. At West Health, we've done some analysis that suggests that you could take $1 trillion of sales out of the pharma sector over a 10-year period. You could maintain the level of R&D at its current level. So we would have been able to do the same thing that we just demonstrated that we were able to do in terms of innovation around the vaccine. And the pharmaceutical sector would still be the most profitable segment of our economy. So we create this perception that it has to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. And in fact, it's an imperative that we find a different trajectory, because none of us should be forced to make choices that jeopardize our health because of the belief that it's necessary for bleeding edge innovation.
So let me ask you, Tim, though, why have these challenges been so persistent? You just mentioned, obviously, the profit interests of certain actors. But over time, why haven't we seen more progress in terms of bringing some of these costs down?
One piece of it is there's the belief that in, you know, the United States that we have very good healthcare. Right. And, you know, that just doesn't bear out. When you compare our healthcare system in terms of outcomes, how many infants die, how long do we live, how much access do we have to care? We only rank number one in one area, and that's cost. We spend the most. On every other metric, we're at the bottom of the barrel when you compare us to developed countries. But people believe, they have this misconception that it's the best. And when you believe it's the best, you can, you know, convince yourself that, well, I'm getting what I'm paying for. And, you know, I equate it to, you know, back to this concept of cost, that we just pay more. You know, the iPhone Pro just launched. I think it's, you know, $1,000 or something like that, sort of, you know, globally. Imagine that if, you know, in Europe, you could buy the iPhone Pro for $1,000, but in the US, it was $2,000, but you weren't getting the iPhone Pro. You were getting the iPhone 6 or the iPhone 7. It was, you know, it was an inferior product. And that's the reality. We're spending more for an inferior product. We just don't have the context to understand that that's the case. So I think that's one. It's misconception. And the other just really comes down to dollars, right? The lobbying that goes into protecting the profits that fuel the healthcare industry, both providers. It's not just the drug companies, the medical device manufacturers, the providers, the pharmaceutical companies. They spend a tremendous amount of money to protect their profit. And I think a great example of that is in California. You know, there were, you know, some initiatives to lower the cost of prescription drugs by using referencing the VA's pricing structure. And in one quarter, the pharmaceutical industry spent over $150 million to try to defeat that. So there's, you know, they're well resourced, and the status quo is very comfortable for the industry. It's very uncomfortable for the rest of us who, again, make choices we shouldn't have to make.
And I would also add, Mohammed, that, you know, we at West Health, we are good capitalists. We believe in capitalism and we want people to make money, but these profits are obscene. I think that, like Tim said, you know, when seniors are forced to make a choice, do I buy my medicine or do I pay my rent, and then become homeless, they don't add up. These metrics don't add up.
And it's, again, it's not a, it is fundamentally a different service than a lot of the things we think about. Like, healthcare is really critical. And I think for those of us who have seniors in our life, and, you know, whether we're helping to take care of them or have just been, you know, a part of their kind of, you know, days in dealing with health challenges, the costs are absolutely immense. I love a video you all have on your website where one gentleman says that basically he was, you know, diagnosed with a cancer and he was on medications that were like, it was just like an astronomical number of what he would actually have to pay if he was paying out of pocket. And of course, you know, he's probably not paying out of pocket directly, but our system has so many loopholes that whether or not that person's able to get those drugs at an affordable price, it really is a matter of, you know, how solid is your contract? It has nothing to do with just the basic concept of you're somebody who's struggling with a life-altering disease and need help.
Healthcare should be a right, but, you know, specifically, healthcare is a right. It's just, unfortunately, we haven't gotten there yet. As it relates to drugs and, you know, these expensive therapies, we recently did some analysis that looked at adherence. So whether someone takes the medication they were prescribed as it relates to cost. And, you know, certainly, you know, what it costs you is a function of what percentage or how much out of pocket you're responsible for. But it's also a function of the cost of the drug. If you're going to pay 20% of a $100 drug, that's less money than 20% of a $1,000 drug. And what we found is that there's a direct relationship between adherence and out of pocket and, you know, sort of total price or cost of a therapy. And if we were to move forward, you know, some bold initiatives like allowing Medicare to negotiate so that we could have lower drug pricing, we could save over 1 million lives over a 10-year period. That's 1 million people that die, right? That experience mortality because they simply can't afford the medication that they need, and therefore they don't take it as prescribed. It's unacceptable.
Now that we've seen a pretty historic, I think on any count, election and a new Congress and leadership coming into office, are there opportunities for progress that you all see in the horizon?
Absolutely. So we have a three-point platform that Tim really pushes forward with respect to our policy efforts, and that is around making sure that Medicare can negotiate for drugs. The biggest purchaser of drugs in America is basically neutered right now. And so we want to make sure that we give their legs back to CMS and allow them to negotiate for all of these high cost drugs to assure that Americans can stay healthy, remain healthy, be healthy. The second point is around value-based care. And that's something that we've done a lot of work in, especially with Dr. Mark McClellan out of the Duke Margolis Policy Center. And then our third area is transparency. And I think Tim and I, along with the boards, really believe there's going to be some great opportunities moving into the future to further this platform. And I know that Tim can talk a lot more about some of the value-based initiatives that we're working on with different states.
No, that's great, Shelley. I want to circle around, Shelley, to a point that you made earlier in this discussion related to the high rent district and our work around successful aging. In many ways, Mohammed, West Health was very well prepared to help support change and response in the context of COVID because of our work with seniors. This concept of avoiding high rent districts, the hospitals, the nursing homes, and projecting care into the community is something that we've long studied because seniors want to be at home. They're better off at home. They have better outcomes if you can safely address their needs, not just healthcare needs, but their social services and supports as well. So we understood how to do that. When COVID hit our healthcare system, we very quickly realized that there, for the most part, there was not the capacity to flex, to have an agile system and switch to projecting care into the home, into the community. And that's an area that we were very focused on as it relates to not only sort of, you know, just operational assistance of how healthcare systems could use telehealth and other modalities, but how we could think about policy changes and waivers, right, to be able to support that. But what we find in looking, you know, sort of back, right, you know, just even just, you know, a few months back, is that those healthcare systems that had already made investments to be able to proactively address needs at a community level, that had some public health sort of capabilities, that had the agility to flex where their resources were deployed, they fared far better, in the context of COVID, right, in the ability for them to meet the individuals in the community. And because they've had better outcomes, I do think that as we look at the new Congress, there's going to be absolutely opportunity to learn from that that, and then look at what payment models, right, and what structural changes can happen, you know, to our system so that we have a more agile system, right, so that we're not stuck in this one-size-fits-all, you know, sort of, you know, approach that we've become too experienced with.
Shelley, do you see an opportunity for progress or improvement in this area as an outcome of the current crisis with COVID?
Oh, definitely. I absolutely, you know, I think that COVID has shined a light on the fragility of our healthcare system. And like, just if we just take one example of a huge opportunity that I'm really excited about shining a light on, leveraging and taking into the future is telehealth. So isolation among seniors is a real issue, and it creates a whole host of conditions. For instance, a Harvard study concluded that being isolated and being alone is the equivalent of smoking 17 cigarettes a day. That's the effect to your body. And when we think about COVID now and the orders, especially the orders that Tim and I are living under here in California, where we have to isolate, we have to stay at home. And that has been enacted for seniors since March 18th. March 18th, our state closed down, and wow, seniors have been forced to stay at home. Now, that is take that on top of already isolation, and we have a real issue. And so I think there, what we've seen is telehealth can play a huge component in extending healthcare into the home and also extending opportunities to communicate and be with other people rather than just your only friend being a TV.
And in addition to staying healthy, sort of also just improving your well-being.
Absolutely. Being able to have mental health consultations, being able to have primary health consultations, derm consults, whatever it might be. You know, there are huge opportunities with telehealth. And I think we're scratching the surface right now. We've always believed in it. West Health has always believed in moving the data and not the patient. But especially with COVID now, that is just one area of opportunity. And CMS has enacted payment schedules, which has been great. That's been a huge barrier for us in the past. But I think if, you know, Tim can talk a little bit about how we are further leveraging telehealth in our PACE populations. And PACE is a really interesting model of care that we're very excited about forwarding.
Tim, what's PACE?
So PACE is called the Program for All Inclusive Care for the Elderly. And to qualify for PACE, you essentially, you know, are a senior that would otherwise be in an institutional setting. So a skilled nursing facility or a long-term care, you know, a setting that when you look at what's happened with COVID, right, you know, the mortality there has been horrific, you know, and frightening. So PACE historically provides care all-inclusive, so it's 100% at-risk based model, where we provide all of the healthcare as well as the psychological support, the social services, the physical care, and it's generally done in a PACE center where you bring people in and there's opportunity for social interaction and games and therapy, as well as a health clinic, and then the specialty care is obviously coordinated. When COVID hit, we had to change our operations. We operate a PACE center in North County, San Diego, with over 100 participants at this time. But we had to change operations immediately, right? Because these frail, complex individuals, you know, are much safer at home. But how do you meet their needs, and not just their healthcare needs, but how do you meet their psychological needs and their social needs, you know, in the home? And so, you know, literally overnight, we went from a model that was, you know, very centered dependent, right, to one that was completely distributed. And what we found through that is that telehealth was not only an asset for us to be able to provide sort of, you know, sort of medical interventions, right, and maintain a tether to these individuals so we knew whether their status was changing, it was an opportunity for us to engage with them just on the human level. We deployed these tablets called Care.Coach, and it allowed for telemedicine visits, but it also allowed for team members to just check in, to tell a story, to play some music, to tell a joke, to ask whether they took their medication. And it was those broader applications of telemedicine that really has enabled us to be quite effective in keeping the seniors, you know, safe at home, but also maintaining the high level of, you know, health that they desire and deserve, you know, during this pandemic.
I would also say on this point, Mohammed, what we have seen through COVID is the importance of social services and the lack thereof. So let's think about something that all of us are thinking about right now is hunger and lack of access to food and how important food is with respect to maintaining health. And we, in fact, say at West Health that food is medicine. And so when you're taking off a kind of this macro level look at the healthcare system right now, what has COVID shined a light on? Well, I think there are some positive things as well, like, you know, Project Warp Speed. We were able to pull together a whole host of people and move very quickly. The FDA is moving quickly to approve drugs. The trials are underway. I mean, it's very exciting. It shows that our nation can come together and we can try to address a problem holistically. There are a lot of things that COVID has shined a light on that are not good, as all of us know. Hunger is one of them, but hunger has been a problem for seniors for many, many years, as has isolation. So I am hopeful that through kind of this general recognition amongst the entire population, that we can see that we really do need to do better for seniors in this country. And prioritizing social services is really important with respect to the importance of that and how it plays a role in your overall health. In Europe, Europeans spend $2 on social services for every $1 they spend on medical services. And they have much better health outcomes than we do.
You know, Mohammed, you know, one thing that, you know, was core to what Shelley was just discussing is this concept of how interconnected, you know, all of the various facets, right, that influence our health outcomes are. And I'd like to bring that up a level because there's also an interconnection, and you've asked about sort of the economic impact versus health impact. There's been polling questions, right, as, you know, as we were just going through the last national election, asking people what's most important, you know, the economic outcome, the COVID response, the cost of healthcare. These are not mutually exclusive concepts. They're interconnected. And as soon as we start forcing a prioritization or a choice between one versus the other, I think we create a moral crisis that certainly will not put us on the trajectory to, you know, a positive outcome as a country or positive outcomes as individuals.
Shelley Lyford, Tim Lash, West Health, thank you for what you do. And thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mohammed. Thank you.
That's our podcast. Thank you for tuning in. To subscribe to the podcast from any podcast app, just search the Gallup Podcast. And for more key findings from Gallup News, go to news.gallup.com or follow us at Gallup News. If you have questions, feedback, or suggestions on topics for future episodes, we want to hear from you. Write to us directly by emailing podcast@gallup.com. This Gallup Podcast is directed by Curtis Grubb and produced by Justin McCarthy. I'm Mohammed Yunus. And this is Gallup, reporting on the will of the people since the 1930s.